go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Tuesday, the 30th day of July, 2013. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. It is listener-supported. It is available to you. Nobody ever sends a bill. Nobody ever asks you to pay for anything in advance. It's available for those who want it. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, with, of course, the program being available by smartphone, tablet device, what have you, with the magnificent devices or apps available through TuneIn Radio, for instance, my particular favorite. Also another close second to Stitcher Internet Radio. Jump right in there. Yeah, maybe I am a little bit hoarse. I think it was the cool weather yesterday. Who knows? I might possibly be zebra instead of horse. Anyway, you can also get the podcast at iTunes. So we've got that part out of the way, right? All of this effort is, of course, done because it's what you want to see continue to be done. Listener contributions drive every bit of this. We had some real nice help from Harry in Finland yesterday, and it's been mighty thin since, and so it's looking, with this being the 30th day of July, it is looking like we're going to end in the red, which makes things very, very scary for August. Because right now we are at about 650. Yeah, we'll looks like we're going to wind up about $800 in the hole. So that's how July is going to close out unless things change rather dramatically. If you want to help them change rather dramatically, and every bit of help is dramatic, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, under the tab Contribute is the traditional mail address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, personal mailbox is what that stands for, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Remember, checks, money orders, things like that should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable, in fact, to Head On Communications, The Horn, something like that. Okie dokie. So chat room's beginning to fill up. Welcome, welcome. And it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and it's amazing to me. It never ceases to amaze me, I guess I should say, that I can have a program completely lined out, be all ready to go, know exactly what we're going to be talking about, or what I plan at least on talking about, and 2.5 minutes before airtime, it all changes. That happened this evening. So, why? Well, here, let me explain. It was real easy. This being Titanic Tuesday, and Titanic Tuesday being a celebration of the Titanic genius that attends the right wing's thought processes, if we may use that term so loosely. Well, I thought I got our poster child earlier today, and it actually flowed out of something that happened the night before, last night. you may recall that our dear friend Tim from L.A., who was apparently trying to get one over on old Bob by sending along a Daily Current story announcing that Rick Man on Dog, Rick Santorum, Bro Fro Mix, as we like to call him, and his wife were getting a divorce. But I saw that it came from the Daily Current. I realized it was a joke site. It was a satire site. It was political parody, perhaps, even, too, also. And I remarked on the fact that, well, one has to be careful these days, or one may easily punk oneself, thinking that one of these things is a real story. And then, lo and behold, the goddess of irony hands me one today. And it comes with a magnificent photo, too, of a dude who looks like a character out of a Dr. Seuss drawing. He looks like a who. The who in question is apparently... And when I first saw... Okay, so here's... Here, cut to the chase. I jumped at the headline because the headline said, New Hampshire lawmaker duped by satirical post on bestiality outbreak. And you know how sometimes we see a story about something particularly awful or ignorant, and the first thing that goes through our minds is, please don't let it be a West Virginia guy. Please don't let it be a West Virginia guy. Or if you're in Texas, please don't let it be a woman from Texas. Please don't let. And it's every day in Alabama, Stan. Please don't let it be somebody from Alabama. Or Kentucky, Stan. Hi, Dennis. How's the mowing? Please don't let... Right. Well, I saw this New Hampshire lawmaker duped by a satirical post on bestiality outbreak, and the first thing that went through my mind was, please don't let it be a Democrat. Please don't let it be a Democrat. Please don't let it be a Democrat. That almost sounds like praying, doesn't it? Well, it is, to a certain extent, to the goddess of irony, the only deity formally acknowledged on this network. A New Hampshire state lawmaker, according to the story by Arturo Garcia at Raw Story, a New Hampshire state lawmaker had to be told by a colleague that his concerns over marriage equality had been inflamed, mind you, by at least two satirical posts online, Miscellany Blue reported on Monday. When we were discussing same-sex marriage, people said talking about multiple partners, animal interactions, made those who define marriage as a relationship between man and woman as silly and foolish. No, silly and foolish is that sentence, because it's actually a quote. Let's see if we can make some sense out of it. Because when we were discussing same-sex marriage, people said talking about multiple partners, animal interactions, made those who define marriage as a relationship between a man and a woman as silly and foolish. Said State Representative Jordan Ullery, wrote in an email to fellow lawmaker Representative Jan Schmidt. Today, however, in several states, multiple partners and even bestiality have been proposed or floated as extensions. You got this so far? Yes, of course. And then Ullery, which rhymes with foolery, forwarded links from the Daily Current, the one that that Tim tried to get me with yesterday. Ullery then forwarded links to a post on the satirical website The Daily Current that said authorities in New Zealand were trying to fend off an increase in instances of bestiality following the country's legalization of same-sex couplings, as well as a satirical post from the commentary site Smashmouth Politics titled Vermont Legislature Considering a Bill That Would Legalize Bestiality, Polygamy, etc. And that's when New Hampshire State Representative, Democrat, Representative Tim Smith got into it and informed informed Jordan Ullery that he was relying on satire pieces to advance his incredibly stupid argument that marriage equality will lead to, well, there's Rick Santorum again, man on dog sex, or dog on man, or dog, never mind, my head's hurting. So I thought, well, it's Titanic Tuesday. Here is a perfect, picture-perfect example of the Titanic intellect of the right wing. You might remember Titanic Tuesday is named after the giant-brained right-winger over not too far from here in Beckley, who once told one of his listeners that there are fossilized seashell imprints in the rock strata of mountainous West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates, hence Titanic Tuesday. Yeah. So easy, right? And I guess I did stick with my original idea of opening the program with this neo-maxi Zoom dweeby Jordan Ullery. Apparently, well, this is and Tim Smith, who got in, who smartened up the chump in violation of the W.C. Fields' third commandment. Tim Smith smartened up the chump and says, "It says a lot that you can't tell the difference between satire and reality. Poe's Law is hard at work." And if you look up Poe's Law over at the Urban Dictionary, it says that without explicitly saying that content is satirical, it is impossible to parody a political position without someone mistaking it for a genuine argument on its behalf. And it does seem to strike right-wingers with a little more frequency than it does our side. I think it has to do with the rather reptilian brains that right-wingers bring to the process in the first place. Yeah. So that's our poster child, Jordan Ullery, who reads the Daily Current and thinks it's news. Whoop. Yeah. Now, here's the problem. And it's not a problem as such. So right before airtime, as Dr. Bill was wrapping up, I got an email. I got an internet from Lisa Miller at the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, where if you're not burning coal, you're going to freeze to death in the dark and poop in a bucket. We got to have the coal. Lisa Camuso Miller is apparently vice president for media affairs, so I got this breathless email PR pitch, ACCCE statement on EPA administrator's remarks. And then all in bold, and if I want to talk more about it, I'm supposed to call Lisa Camuso Miller back, which I ain't gonna. They're in Washington, D.C. They're hacking and flacking for the clean coal electricity. Of course, which by definition means that they're not underneath a mountaintop removal site breathing poison. But Lisa Camuso Miller wanted me to know that, well, it's all in bold there. Statement from ACE President and CEO Robert M. What? Really? CEO? Statement from ACE President and CEO Robert M. Mike Duncan. Because, you know, he can't just be ACE President and CEO Mike Duncan. He's got to be ACE President and CEO Robert M. Mike Duncan. On EPA Administrator's remarks. Oh, dearie. And here's what ACE President and CEO Robert M. Mike, in quotes, Duncan, had to say.
It was disappointing to hear the EPA Administrator today tell Americans to stop talking about the job-killing potential of new government regulations. The truth is, all Americans should be deeply concerned about government policies that put more people out of work and punish families, especially those who can least afford higher energy costs. I am not one of them. I am ACE President and CEO Robert M. Mike Duncan, and I work in Washington, D.C., and I don't know a goddamn thing about anybody who has to be living with the mountaintop removal or any of the coal poisons or toxins or has a 16-year-old kid die from asthma or anything, because I get a very nice salary not to understand or even think that that stuff exists. Do you understand? I am ACE President and CEO Robert M. Mike Duncan.
So, naturally, that got me wondering. What the hell did the EPA administrator say today? Did she say that she wanted ACE President and CEO Robert M., quote, Mike, unquote, Duncan's head brought to her spitted upon a pike? That seems rather uncharacteristic. But because I am, I at least want to have some... passing understanding of what it is that gets a right-winger like ACE President and CEO Robert M., quote, Mike, unquote, Duncan, so derned upset. Well, I went looking. And I didn't have to look far. Apparently, Gina McCarthy, who is the new EPA head, who from the sounds of things does not tolerate fools gladly, gave a speech today. She gave a speech at Harvard Law School in which she said, climate change will not be resolved overnight. Powerful stuff. But it will be engaged over the next 3 years, that I can promise you. And the folks at Harvard Law School in attendance all clapped nicely. And then Juliet Eilperin, writing for the Washington Post, reports, McCarthy made a full-throated defense of her agency's right to address greenhouse gas emissions and other pollutants, saying that air quality regulations and environmental cleanup efforts have already produced economic benefits in the United States. Which is, well, you know, true. And here's what got ACE President and CEO Robert M., quote, Mike, unquote, Duncan, all in an uproar. She said, can we stop talking about environmental regulations killing jobs, please? And the audience applauded loudly. We need to embrace cutting-edge technology as a way to spark business innovation. You know, because here in America, you can't talk about the fact that it is just the right thing to do not to poison American citizens. You have to add in some jobs, right? Got to talk about the economy. Got to talk about how we're going to create a climate for business to prosper. And I suppose all of that is true. I just prefer the straightforward moral approach of please don't poison my family or yours or anybody's. But there seems to be a little something cooking in the administration right now. Because not only did Administrator McCarthy make these remarks at Harvard, lo and behold, President Not Sure done went all the way down to Chattanooga, Tennessee to deliver some remarks at an Amazon fulfillment center. It's a warehouse, but we don't have warehouses anymore. They're fulfillment centers, because that makes it sound like it's something that's not a warehouse, because warehouse sounds kind of dull, like it might be full of jobs that don't pay very well. Oh, wait. Well, the jobs don't pay very well at Amazon's fulfillment center either, but President Not Sure said that that was kind of a model for America going forward. Yeah. But somewhere along the way, and for reasons I didn't fully comprehend, because sometimes I just don't, he decided to bring up the Keystone XL pipeline again. In the course of talking about dumb things that Republicans want to do, like vote 40 times to overturn Obamacare. Right? Mm-hmm. But along the way, he said, and then there's this pipe, and then there's this pipeline that some people want to see built. But it turns out it would only create about 50 permanent jobs. Well, that's not a jobs program. Well, knock me down. So it sounds, and you know, Sandra and I talked a little bit about this last night. It sounds like he's making some noises toward not approving the giant death funnel, as Charlie Pierce calls it, going through the very heart of our country. But I digress. So, yeah, I guess we have to talk about the ability of human beings to live on the planet within the context of whether or not somebody can make a dollar at it along the way. So that's what Gina McCarthy said. Can we stop talking about environmental regulations killing jobs, please? We need to embrace cutting-edge technology as a way to spark business innovation. Along the way, she poked some fun, good-naturedly, at her own apparently heavy Boston accent. And she is, yeah, she. Right. But that was it. That was it. She was, I think, an environmental administrator under Bishop Willard Romney when he was governor of Massachusetts. The article goes on to say that the EPA has taken a lot of hell from right-wingers over her position on coal-fired power plants. And, in fact, she was only confirmed, a couple of weeks ago, and that's when my senator, Joe Manchin, voted with all the other Republicans. Notice I said other Republicans. Or some of the other Republicans, I should say. She got confirmed, obviously. But she says she has some plans. She says the EPA can't dictate solutions, that the EPA has to engage. She said EPA will continue to focus on water quality and environmental justice. Because, and environmental justice is kind of a buzzword for saying, why is it we always wind up poisoning the poor folks? There is no greater environmental justice issue in this country today, by the way, than mountaintop removal in central Appalachia. It's killing people. As my friend and colleague Bo Webb puts it, if something goes wrong with the Keystone XL pipeline and people die, it'll be an accident when the BP Horizon Deepwater disaster took place. It was an accident. If something goes wrong at a fracking site, it's an accident. Mountaintop removal is on purpose. 4,000 excess deaths per year in communities that have mountaintop removal operations in them. 4,000. Now, that's not to say that the connection is direct, but I don't have to tell you that because the Horn Family Commune is among the more intelligent radio audiences out there. But, yeah, environmental justice, mountaintop removal. Yeah, hey, Gina, Administrator McCarthy, could you run that to the top of your list, please? Has anybody briefed you? Because, among other things, it turns out that a bunch of sleazy, slimy politicos from southern West Virginia and points elsewhere in the state have announced that they're going to Washington, D.C., and they're going to talk to the EPA and tell them to quit killing our coal jobs, even though they're not killing any coal jobs. Even though Patriot employees are being robbed of their pensions, not by some tree hugger, but by the corporation that told them that the tree huggers were the problem. See how it works? McCarthy also said the agency would continue to focus on water quality and environmental justice. Right. Hal Quinn is the president and chief executive. Boy, they're all just presidents and chief executives these days, but Hal doesn't have a quotation mark nickname in the middle of his name, so he's not that far up the food chain, apparently. He's just president and CEO of the National Mining Association. You might recall that the National Mining Association is the organization for whom the lawyers at Cowell Mooring, a law firm in Washington, D.C., put out a press release after the study was released that showed the significant increase in birth defects in Appalachia near mountaintop removal sites. It was the National Mining Association's lawyers who put out the press release claiming that the study was invalid because it didn't take into account that us dumb damn hillbillies can't help having sex with our brothers and our sisters. The term they used was consanguinity. These geniuses even misspelled consanguinity. They spelled it consanguinity, C-O-N-S-A-N-Q-U-I-N-I-T-Y. But, yeah, that National Mining Association. So Hal Quinn, who has no quotation mark nickname in the middle of his name, who's president and CEO of the National Mining Association, said that Gina McCarthy is keenly interested in National Mining Association's technical assessments of the impact of EPA rules during a meeting earlier this year. But he's worried. Poor nicknameless Hal Quinn is. He's worried that the EPA will press for unrealistic carbon standards. He said a 2011 rule on mercury and air toxins had forced utilities to retire at least 40,000 megawatts of coal-fired electricity. Mercury, air toxins, toxins. Oh, you mean poisons? That kill people? Yeah. And Hal, no nickname Quinn, is very upset about that. He wanted to be able to go on poisoning Americans, because that's a good dollar. That's a real good dollar, that poisoning Americans. That's one of your better dollars. Quinn gave a quote for the story here in the Washington Post. He said, "The investments that have been made in utilities that could be jeopardized or stranded because of the rules on greenhouse gas emissions." Hal, we need a verb. The investments that have been made in utilities that could be jeopardized or stranded because of the rules on greenhouse gas emissions, Quinn said. Okay, we've got a subject, we got no verb, and we got no predicate. Oh well. Meanwhile, Gina McCarthy pushed back and said, "You know, it's hard for me to think our rule is the driving factor behind these closures in light of the fact that the utility the coal-fired toxic power plant closings were announced way before the EPA kicked in any rule requirements. This is, she continued, this is about using subjects and predicates and verbs, I might add, as opposed to Hal Quinn, poor nicknameless bastard. This is about the abundance of low-cost natural gas. It's about how utilities are making decisions company-wide about how to invest in the future the way they see it right now, which, I might add, is also true. She also played her cards close to the vest on the Keystone XL pipeline. And a Sierra Club member during the Q&A, a Sierra Club member stood up and asked a Keystone question, and she said, "We will continue to work with the administration as difficult decisions are made." Uh-oh. But she followed up and said, "It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be all the different voices coming together, screaming at the top of their lungs like three children." And she said she would work hard to have all those voices be heard and to listen to them, and it's my obligation to keep peace in the family, whether it's my EPA one or my little one. Families, she means. And see, I do have a little difference of opinion with her there. There's no balancing act at the EPA. It is the Environmental Protection Agency. It's not the Business Protection Agency. It's not the Capitalism Protection Agency. You could even make an argument, though it grieves me to do so, that it's not the People Protection Agency. Even people who are being poisoned to death underneath mountaintop removal operations, some of us can get out and march. Some of us can go knock on doors. Some of us can beg to be heard in offices of the House of Representatives and the Senate. Some of us can go and knock on doors at the Council on Environmental Quality or even the EPA itself. The environment can't. Millions upon millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of years old mountain cannot. A stream that once ran clear from a crack in the stone high up on the slope and cut its own little tiny run down to the bottom of the mountain over the course of, again, millions of years, can't. When it runs red with acid mine drainage, or becomes poisoned with selenium or aluminum or manganese or magnesium or mercury or arsenic or just about anything else from the heavy metal side of the periodic table of the elements, that poor little stream, it can nurture life. It can feed beautiful deer that come walking up to it to lap from its cool running self. Raccoons, noted for being rather fastidious, can wash their hands in its waters. Beautiful symphonies can be made by the sounds of raindrops falling from leaf to leaf. Leaf, and in eventually into the stream. Boop. But it can't go and knock on Gina McCarthy's door. It ain't supposed to be so hard. Protecting the environment, not balancing, not considering the needs of capitalism. Protecting the environment is the sole purpose of the Environmental Protection Agency. It isn't that hard. Huh. Just a few thoughts to get us started. Ron and Raleigh writing in with a question. Say why? Says, I mean, S-A-Y-W-H-A-Y. Say why? Bob, is there a pod in the White House basement that looks exactly like President Not Sure? I think this has to do, I'm pretty sure, with the guy who showed up and was talking about the Keystone XL pipeline only actually having 50 jobs. I don't know, Ron. Kind of does make you wonder. But there it is, in all its glory. She didn't, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy did not tell people to just, or the coal industry to just shut them up, although that is exactly what should be said to them. Here, let me do it. Hey, coal industry, shut the up with your lies. Please? Stop talking about job-killing potential of new government rate. Well, that's not what she said. It wasn't like she was being all Pol Pot on the poor little ACCCE and ACE president and CEO Robert M. quote Mike unquote Duncan. He must have missed the second sentence, or else Lisa Camuso Miller, vice president, media affairs, was so intellectually dishonest that she could not continue on with the quote, in which she said, she being Gina McCarthy, and pronouns can be such a challenge sometimes, in which Gina McCarthy said, quit talking about job-killing regulations, because regulations don't kill jobs, they help us build an economy. Regulations are good for business. See, I go back, for instance, to last night's foot-washing water-made rice vermicelli story out of China. Now, your free marketeers and your Ayn Randians and your Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist types would say, well, see, the free market will take care of that. People will get wind of the fact. Well, who the hell wants to eat vermicelli? Smells like feet. And he'll go out of business. Except he doesn't. Because hungry people will buy just about anything. And this is a very, very, need I say, very hungry world. New and improved with more foot odor. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? So I get the sense that the ACE sounds kind of snaky, doesn't it? Oddly enough, they are. You can only come to one. They're either stupid or dishonest. No. There's always another possibility. They're stupid and dishonest. The ACE. What a jackass. What a self-important prick. Because, you know, there just had to be a memo to Lisa from, quote, Mike, unquote. Dear Lisa, when referring to me in press releases, please refer to me as ACE President and CEO Robert M., quote, Mike, unquote, Duncan. Comma, because, after all, we all know that I'm hung like a housefly and am terribly, terribly insecure and need all the help I can get. So please make sure you refer to me as ACE President and CEO Robert M., quote, Mike, unquote, Duncan. let's see. Thank you. Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs. He says, Saturday was my birthday. Happy birthday, Kevin! And I received some birthday money. So getting money ordered tomorrow, and you can minus $10 from the total that we're down. Call it a Titanic Tuesday tithe. I can call it that once. If I try to say it twice or a third time, I'll probably strangle myself on my own tongue. Oh, wait. Prayer meeting Wednesday is tomorrow. Well, that's okay, says Kevin, since I won't be sending it out till tomorrow. Hope it encourages others to contribute as well. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very kindly. By the way, for this Titanic Tuesday, Marty wants a Ted Cruz moment. Ted Cruz earlier today said, I don't know why that one in our White House wants to shut down the government. Who, and of course, no one does know why President Not Sure wants to shut down the government. Because he doesn't. He's the one arguing against it. But the man who could be easily mistaken for Joe McCarthy, or his evil grandson or something, I shall call him Mini-Me. Well, he missed that part of the memo. Oh, okay. All right, all right. Now, we have now officially entered the quibbling part of the program. Irish Dave writing in, now comes the nitpicking time. Chalk on blackboard or using the verb quote in place of the noun quotation. Just say, ain't none of us perfect. No. That's not how that works. It's not being used as a verb. It is merely, it is vocalizing diacritical marks. Just like if you're dictating and you say, paren, blah, 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 close paren. Right? Okay. But, yeah, I get the point. Thanks, Dave. Thank you very kindly, Greg. Greg also just contributed. And I think there was a sense of humor involved here. $6.66. That's good. That's nice. Thank you. We do appreciate it. Backing up just a little bit, a note from Ron in Raleigh. Baba went to see Pacific Rim at the IMAX theater in 3D. Boy, that technology has changed since I saw 13 Ghosts as a kid. Since this is Titanic Tuesday, as you may know, the Kyaju attack from a breach between Titanic plates. The question that prompted this email is listening to you-know-who, a fellow called in about reverse racism and how come African countries didn't exploit their own resources and what does colonization and racism have to do with anything. I'm glad I wasn't listening to you-know-who today. Ron simply asks, are white people unable to recognize their own personal racism? The other question is, can racists watch a movie like Pacific Rim, where one of the heroic leads is a black man, and enjoy seeing a person of color being portrayed as a leader and a hero, showing all the traits that mud people are not supposed to... Man, oh, you just had to go there. Really, Ron? Really? You hauled out mud people? That's one of those Klan phrases. But showing all the traits that mud people are not supposed to possess. And you know who the ultimate test of that question is? Will Smith. Has Will Smith ever been allowed to have a love scene on screen with a white woman? Maybe I missed it, but I don't think I have. Ron's in good form this evening. Oddly enough, Ron, I thought of this very same thing. Ron said, when I hear that vermicelli story from China, the rice vermicelli made from the pond where everybody washes their feet. When I hear that vermicelli story, Ron says, I can't help but hear the strains of Aaron Copland's Rodeo. You know. And the deep tones of Sam Elliott saying, feet. It's what's for dinner. Yeah. Oh, where on earth could that possibly... See, I had a series of Hang on here. We actually parodied that one time. I don't think I'm going to find it. Doesn't look good. When you do a search through your mail and the answer comes back, many, you know you're in trouble. We did a series of parodies. Fear, It's What's for Dinner, many years ago. Proud of them, too. Those were three good ones. Anyway, but yeah, I had the same thing happening in my head even as I was doing the feet. It's What's for Dinner. So do you have a sense for where we're going with tonight's Titanic Tuesday? It's beginning to shape up, I think. Bill, Mr. Stress, needed a question answered. I just took care of that real quick. Multitasking here on the horn. No, there's a lot. Whole bunch of stuff out there today. I found this story interesting. It reminded me of my little sojourn in Germany when in a village in the west central part of that nation we joyfully peeled Nazi stickers, modern Nazi stickers, off of light posts and such like. The Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles has called for a retraction or suppression even of an article in a German magazine. There is apparently a magazine in Germany called Der Lanzer, L-A-N-D-S-E-R, which I guess that's a term for just a common foot soldier. Der Lanzer. I guess you and I might translate it loosely, the way that soldiers will refer to themselves as grunts. Yeah. In 2013, and maybe it's not so distressing simply because maybe with the passage of time, people do forget. I don't know. But the right wing is on the march in places all over this world. Straight-up fascists have arisen in Greece. There's a story I still haven't gotten to out of Russia that is ridiculous and at the same time potentially terrifying. And then this. The magazine is called Der Lanzer, and it apparently has a real right-wing flavor to it. But they crossed the line this time through. With an article claiming that the Waffen-SS were just a bunch of good old boys of the German, you know, however one is a good old boy and German is what the Waffen-SS were. In a recent issue, the adventures of August Zingel, who was a member of the SS Totenkopf, the Death's Head unit, were recounted. See, Germany actually has laws against glorifying Nazi propaganda. And the question is whether this publication has done so. The German government is apparently, the Interior Ministry is looking seriously at the complaint from the Simon Wiesenthal Center. But here's the fun part. This right-wing magazine is published by an outfit called Pavel Moig. Then they're a wholly owned subsidiary of Bauer Media Group, which is based in Hamburg. But they are the publishers of a whole bunch of magazines published in Great Britain. Closer, Heat, Zoo are a few of the magazine names, as well as Mother and Baby. Yeah, by the way, if you thumb through a copy of Der Lanza, you will frequently see the number 88. Standing for HH, the eighth letter. A, B, C, D, E. Yeah, the eighth letter of the... Had to check! The eighth letter of the alphabet, which stands for... Which is HH, Heil Hitler. Oh, brother. So that's out there. The right wing has to be watched because they are violent, they still want power back, and they'll kill to get it. Whether it's the right wing in America, which is largely made up of, you know, the Tea Party, or the right wing in Greece, or Germany, or Japan, anywhere. Never, never trust a fascist. No, there's a lot of potential in this evening's lineup. A very, very great deal. Where to go? It's about 7 minutes before the hour. Here's one. A passing strange story out of Salt Lake City, Utah. It's the story of a bike ride gone bad. Also a story of life in the police state. Got a couple of these. Like I said, UC Davis. No, Salt Lake City. That's a different story. UC Davis. Did you know that the guy who pepper sprayed the Occupy protesters has filed a workers' comp claim for psychiatric injury? While he was standing there hosing down peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience, he claims he received psychiatric injury. There's a settlement hearing on August the 13th. Bernie Goldsmith is a lawyer in the area who had given some free legal help to Occupy UC Davis. He said there will probably be a protest outside the courthouse. He said, in an ideal democracy, well, really, I'm back to that whole it's 2013 thing again. In 2013, okay, in an ideal democracy, which this ain't. In any kind of a democracy, which this also ain't. But Bernie Goldsmith says, in an ideal democracy, violent suppression of political speech, violent suppressors of political speech are jailed and not rewarded. This sends a message that acts of violent political repression can be both insulated from real criminal prosecution and rewarded. Bonus! John Pike, the guy who hosed these people down, with pepper spray, poisonous, toxic pepper spray, got an 8-month paid vacation before they canned him on July 31st of last year. He was terminated, which was the right thing to do. But before he was terminated, and I imagine, it's more expensive to live somewhere like that, but still, $121,680 a year to be a police lieutenant is not shabby money. Not at all, but that wasn't even the story I was after. No. This is a weird story. It comes out of Salt Lake City. And it's a result of a lawsuit having been filed. Two people, one a woman by the name of Katie Hess, and another, a man named Gavin DeGraw, had been bike riding. And they decided they didn't want to ride bikes anymore. Reading through the body of the story, one gets an idea maybe why they felt like they didn't need to be riding bikes. So they called from an Arby's somewhere in the greater Salt Lake City area for a taxi. About the first thing they'll teach you on your first day of law school, some law professor with a growly voice and really bushy eyebrows will say to you, "Hard cases make bad law." It's true. And one is seldom so fortunate as to be involved in any kind of a case where one side is totally wrong and the other side is totally right. This looks like it's going to be one of those cases. So Hess and DeGraw, and Hess was apparently doing nothing wrong, called for a taxi. The taxi showed up. The taxi did not want the taxi driver, who was of some sort of immigrant status, did not want to put the bikes in his car to transport the fare. At this point, Gavin DeGraw, who does not sound like somebody I or you would want to run around with, oh, I see, yeah, one of the bikes had broken down. But anyway, the taxi driver didn't want to put the bikes in the back of the car. Gavin DeGraw, who does not sound like somebody that you or I would want to run around with, responded by calling the taxi driver a racial epithet. The taxi driver was of Arabic descent. There's a couple of there, and you don't have to go far to probably imagine what he called him. The taxi driver did not take kindly to this. An altercation ensued. Katie Hess, who was not doing anything wrong, screamed at them to both stop it. And Gavin DeGraw then turned to Katie Hess and said, "Go home." But it was about then that she, Hess, heard sirens and decided not to go home. I think maybe some of us would call that judgment into question. But then again, some of us would not. Maybe some of us would flip out our cell phones and video for it and probably get arrested too. So Katie Hess walks away, and this is where it gets a little fuzzy. And this is all reported at Courthouse News Service. So she went over and sat down by a high school and passed out. That's just what happened. This is where the actual reason for a lawsuit existing comes in. She woke up when a dog started biting her leg. Violently. Viciously. Katie Hess was by this time screaming. Screaming for the dog to stop. The police walk up. It was apparently a police dog that was attacking her as she was laying unconscious against a wall near a local high school. Skin was broken. Muscle was protruding. One of the two officers told Katie Hess, "Stand up!" But her leg was so badly injured that she could not stand. So one of the two officers, by name, by the way, one of the officers was Kevin Barrett, who's the handler for the dog in question. The officer became enraged and dragged Katie Hess and threw her back down onto the grass and then handcuffed her. One of the officers allegedly ripped her jeans and exposed an area that she did not wish to have exposed. She had pieces of leg muscle sticking out of her flesh, out of her body. So they get on the radio, one Adam 12, and the police dispatch responds by saying, "You two rock! Wish we had instant photos in here." Severe trauma to the leg? Awesome! Extra treat for Vortex. Vortex is apparently the dog's name. And you deserve a Slurpee! If, you know, it would be about the only song we played on this network if every time I felt like queuing up old Lee Greenwood, "If tomorrow everything I own disappeared, I'd still be American, and ain't that wonderful, God, thank you." Or whatever that Drek is. But a suit has been filed. Sheesh. And, I mean, maybe some of you have better experience with this than I do, but a police dog has to be let go of, aren't they always on a leash? You have to let go of the police dog for the dog to run over and start attacking a human being who is unconscious. And don't you also have to give either a verbal or some sort of hand sign command that means go and rip that person to shreds? That was always my understanding. There's a lot in that story that's really troubling. Gavin DeGraw is certainly nobody you're going to feel sympathetic toward. You've gone bicycling. One of the bikes is inoperable, So you call for a cab. The cab shows up, doesn't want to take your bike in the car, and you start hauling out. You haul out the anti-Arabic racial epithets. Jury's going to, well, I don't know, it's Salt Lake City. Maybe the jury will love it. You know, when I'm in D.C., I see these police dogs all the time. And they're always on a leash. But from time to time, I think about, doesn't that have to be a pretty brutal level of training to get police dogs to the point where they will unhesitatingly attack on command, kill even? I'm just asking because I saw the trailer for a film called Blackfish about the orca that killed the trainer, the SeaWorld trainer or whatever aquarium it was a couple of years ago. And there were details in there of what they do to the, and these are sentient animals. When they go to capture one of these for use as a profit vehicle in a capitalist oriented amusement park, they basically use a net to ring in a pod of orcas who know their own young, one from another. And then they seize the youngest ones because, well, you'll be able to make a profit off of them longer, won't you? Right? And the baby screams, and the parents scream, their little whale screams. As the baby is taken away to go and make money for some really big-ass corporation. And it is kept in, what, I think the trailer said a 20 by 25 tank in total darkness. So that one animal expert said, that there is probably not a single orca in captivity that does not experience some degree, is not constantly experiencing some degree of major, major mental damage, what we would recognize in a human as psychosis. So having seen that trailer, and I want to see this film, although it looks like it's going to be tough to get through, I had to ask myself, when I read this story about the dog attacking the woman and apparently breaking her leg, you know, those jaws are powerful, and harming her to the point that her musculature was sticking out of what had once been intact flesh. I just had to ask myself, what do you have to do to a dog to get it to, for all intents and purposes, kill on command? I cannot think that it is easy. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, they're cops and they got guns. And they somehow think it's a good idea. To just let a So there we are. It is Conversation Radio, however. The Skype line is open, Bob Kincaid Horn. So, too, are the more traditional telephone lines, 304-658-3333. We'll take a break. The Green News Report is back, so we'll hear from that as well. We'll hear from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then jump back into the stacks or your conversation. Either way, it's up to you. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Listener-supported conversation radio. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Long distance calls. I
It's Tuesday, July 30th, 2013.
Let's approach this as an opportunity of a lifetime, because there are too many lifetimes at stake.
EPA's Gina McCarthy smacks down false choice between jobs and the environment.
Republicans have said that this would be a big jobs generator. There is no evidence that that's true.
President Obama smacks down Keystone XL jobs claims. In Australia, winter is the new summer. A witch's brew of pesticides is still killing the bees. Plus, solar-powered battery breakthrough. You'll never guess where it's being used.
Where?
You'll never guess.
All of those guesses and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The same people who are unwilling to cut the spending, and they're gimme, 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 gimme all my Sandy money now.
Oh, and Kentucky U.S. Senator Rand Paul lands a right hook against New Jersey heavyweight Chris Christie.
Come to New Jersey and sit across from the widows and the orphans and have that conversation.
Christie jabs back at Rand Paul with an uppercut.
I didn't start this one, and I don't plan on starting things by criticizing other Republicans.
Oh, but it's too late, and both men are down for the count. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, lots going on today. Never mind Rand Paul and Chris Christie having an out. What do you have for us today?
Well, first, in Australia, winter is the new summer. It's a downright warm winter down under in the southern hemisphere, where parts of Australia are seeing their warmest winter on record, their hottest June, and now their hottest July ever, which follows the U.S.'s record warm winter last year. Super investor Warren Buffett warned last week that coal will die a slow but inevitable death in the U.S.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And now Goldman Sachs is getting in on the game, saying coal exports are a dead end from the U.S. too, concluding in a new analysis that new coal export terminals now being proposed for Washington and Oregon are a bad investment that are unlikely to be profitable.
Now, by the way, Warren Buffett's company owns a whole bunch of those trains that are set to ship tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, especially if the pipeline doesn't come through. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
So he's happy to see the end of coal, maybe excited about the new tar sands oil trains he stands to make gazillions on.
We'll have to find out.
And I suspect we will.
Yes, and more on Keystone XL pipeline in a moment. Another new study finds the collapse in bee populations appears to be caused by a chemical cocktail of pesticides, which had already been suspected, combined with fungicides. That is new. They thought fungicides were safe for bees. The researchers say this witch's brew opens the door for deadly parasites to enter the hive and kill the bees.
What's the difference between pesticide and fungicide?
One kills insects, the other kills fungus. A new study shows...
Oh, like I didn't know that.
A new study shows higher rates of birth defects are clustered near industrial agriculture, where water is polluted with nitrates from farm runoff. That's fertilizers and manure. Those are the same industrial nitrate sources that are creating the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. President Obama reiterating that he will reject the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada if it's determined that the pipeline would significantly contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. And in an interview with the New York Times, he debunked the ridiculously inflated jobs claims of pipeline supporters.
Republicans have said that this would be a big jobs generator. There is no evidence that that's true. The most realistic estimates are this might create maybe 2,000 jobs during the construction of the pipeline, which might take a year or two. And then after that, we're talking about somewhere between 50 and 100 jobs in a economy of 150 million working people.
I love how he laughs when he gets to 50 to 100 jobs.
Somewhere between 50 and 100 jobs.
I know.
Yeah, and that was the jobs plan number one from Eric Cantor, the Republican majority leader in the House. Approved Keystone XL pipeline. He said it would add 20,000 direct and 100,000 indirect jobs.
And it's totally not true. And in her first major policy speech on Tuesday, Gina McCarthy, the new administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, also smacked down the false choice fronted by the climate denial industry that we must choose somehow between jobs and the environment.
It's not a choice between the health of our children and the health of the economy. The truth is that we need to embrace cutting carbon pollution as a way to spark business innovation. And I said, spark. S-P-A-R-K.
Colorful character, this Gina McCarthy, new EPA head.
Finally, a new solar energy breakthrough for rural areas. It uses battery packs as big as cars that store solar energy from solar panels and can generate industrial-level electricity even overnight. The kicker is that pilot project is now being tested on oil rigs to replace diesel generators.
They're using the solar to help them dig for oil.
Right.
The American genius never stops. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. For bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
How it happens, I do not know, but we are nearly halfway through the program for this evening. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And holy cow, I swear to you, because it did not hit my email inbox until after the program started, the Green News Report didn't, I had no idea that I would be, it's just weird, I had no idea that I would reference God, Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA direct. And lo and behold, there it would be on the Green News Report. I promise you, that was not planned. That's just weird and ugly. So, I want to predict a new trope, if I may, a meme. President not sure, chuckling at 50 to 100 jobs, will have the babbling idiots like MC Rove's sidekick on Meet the Prestitutes all in a dither. I imagine that dither is already progressing. I haven't seen it yet in my inbox, but I don't go out on a limb and do prophecy very often. But if I'm willing to do this, they will pick up on it. That just shows how discombobulated that Kenyan Muslim socialist is. That's how much he hates white people. He's laughing at white people having jobs. Them's 50 good jobs. Them's 50 jobs put food on your family. And he's a laughing at them. There is no bottom, there is no depth to which this Kenyan Muslim will not sink, a laughing at working people in America. Anybody want to take the bet? Now you know, don't you? Yeah. It's coming, just as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you a bellyache if you eat too many. It's coming. And granted, it is not prayer meeting Wednesday, but I don't want to just sort of leave this one on the table. So, you know, while he was down in Rio de, well, you know, I don't know. I've heard it said that changes can happen when you go to a place like Brazil, Rio. That you start thinking different. And Pope Frank went down there, and on the way back he answered a question about gay folks, particularly gays in the priesthood. And he said something like, who am I to judge? And now people like the Archbishop Cardinal 32nd Degree Noble Turk or whatever he is, Dolan, is it, oh, no, stop that. Don't play the music. Said that Pope Frank was not saying anything about, you know, being more, the church being more decent. To gay people. Now, he said it's absolutely not a change. Well, there's no doctrinal difference here. Nope, not at all.
Is this, what was the Pope saying, and why did he say it now?
He said it, and this is what I'm amazed, and I think as journalists you would appreciate this. He spent an hour and 21 minutes in as calm and as personable as he could be on that plane coming back.
Look at this picture of you.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. I mean, that's longer than presidents of the United States said at the press. You all must be delighted about that. You think we can get him on this show?
With your help,
yes,
God's
put
will.
In word? Yes.
What he's saying, right. What he's trying to say, Charlie, in answer to your question, is he's articulating well, in a beautifully tender way, the traditional teaching of the Church. That while certain acts may be wrong, we would always love and respect the person. And
see, I remember when Peter Godbold addressed that on his brilliant and groundbreaking program, Strictly Confidential, some years back. That is frequently translated by the religion industry. The shorthand for that is hate the sin, but love the sinner. I don't know. The angry Indian asking me, has Bill Donahue said anything yet? And he's probably attacking a chocolate Jesus even as we speak. But no, these prelates, these princes of the church are falling all over themselves to say that, oh no, no, His Holiness wasn't saying anything decent about gay people. Love the sinner, hate the sin. See? There's only one problem with that. That phrase used to drive Peter absolutely nuts. Because, well, if you insist on misreading that book of ancient myths and bigotries, you might be able to come up with the idea that somehow or another there was a bias against homosexuality in the ancient biblical world, or at least in that part of the ancient world. Now, homosexuality was actually enshrined in Greek culture. The Romans didn't take too kindly to it, but they practiced it with real aplomb. And there's some stuff maybe in the hallucinogenic writings of St. Paul, and certainly some stuff in the ancient brutalities of the early books of the Bible, the Old Testament. But Jesus, the guy they named their religion after, never said a word about it. But these guys in dresses are running around going nuts. What did His Holiness just? Oh no! No! That gayin is just still wrong. We love the sinner, but we hate the sin. Who? And I'm asking this from a secular perspective. Who the F do they think they are to tell a person who is not Catholic what is and is not a sin? Who are they to tell a person whom they allege was made by their loving God that their loving God made them wrong? But see, even Dolan uses those tiresome old bits of religious flummery. And does it? I don't know. You think Jesus likes that or would like that? You know, when Dolan says they shouldn't be marginalized, talking about gay priests, who am I to judge if they're seeking the Lord in good faith? They shouldn't be marginalized. The tendency is not the problem. You know, stand by a sec. Off-air consultation going on here. Sorry, I had to answer a question from Agnes. The tendency is not the problem. You got that? It's not how you were born or how someone was born. Heterosexual or homosexual, it's not how a person was born. It's a tendency. Just like, oh, I don't know, It's probably less, according to this clown, it's less rooted in the essence of being human than one's handedness is. And it is certainly less rooted in one's essence as a human than eye color is. And that's where the problem comes from with this. And there are people in the for-profit media and whatnot having absolute conniptions about it. Oh, look, the church is changing. Oh, look, the church is modernizing. Oh, look, he doesn't want to burn the gay people at the stake anymore. Bull. And I say bull all the way to the top. So just be careful. Like I need to tell you to be careful. But watch this stuff closely. Homosexuality is not a sin, right? Homosexual acts are. Well, we haven't seen bishops dancing on the head of a pin like that since the 13th century. Remember, this is the asshat who tried to impose his religious convictions on the entirety of the people of New York by trying to prevent a marriage equality law from going through. Not happy to be a prince of his own church, he wants to lord it over everybody else, even people who think that, well, he's full of, you know. Philip says, I don't speak Spanish well, Bob, but what I heard from the Pope was, I'd be relieved if my only problem was gay priests rather than pederasts, financial corruption, bankruptcy from property sales to pay legal fees, and South Americans embracing evangelicism. Then again, priests and gays have much in common in the views of the church. Neither is supposed to engage in sexual activity according to church doctrine, but then there's reality. Thank you, Philip. Yeah, by the way, and I will go to the phones here just in a second. By the way, a note in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Kevin has been an EMT in his life. And he says, in my experience as an EMT, the times I've been around when this sort of thing has happened, the police dog is always chained and, yes, responds to verbal commands by the officer. In my experience, the wounds were never that great, just the bite wounds you would expect, certainly not to the point of tearing the leg and crotch area to expose muscle. Generally, the officer releases the dog, and when the dog has the suspect down, the officer gives the command for the dog to stay so as to keep the dog from killing the person, and also the officer can handcuff the person without himself getting bitten. The dispatcher's comments were also deplorable and unprofessional. Having said all that, I missed, so I sent him the link to the story. And again, the woman was unconscious. She didn't have to be immobilized. She was already on the ground. Ron and Raleigh noting, so Pope Frankie went to the home of transgendered persons and had a revelation about gay people? Will wonders never cease? There are, P.S., there are huge numbers of transgendered women in Brazil. Well, there's that. I hadn't even considered it. I was thinking more into, well, never mind. Hey, let's, I hate keeping people on hold. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob? This is Jim in Covington, Louisiana.
How you doing, Jim? Good to hear from you.
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, this thing about the big P, you know, a.k.a. the Pope, and, you know, what he thinks about people's lifestyles. I mean, I'm a born-again atheist. I could care less what the big P thinks.
Well, there is that. But where it becomes an issue for me, Jim, and let's be clear about this, where it becomes an issue is when people like Dolan want to impose their narrow-minded, bigoted, prejudiced, hate-filled, religious views on the rest of us who want nothing to do with it. And see, whether it's him or some member, you know, the American Association of Bishops or whatever they call it, the Conference of American Bishops, you know, when they say, you know, Obamacare is evil, or the gays can't be getting married. Whenever they, you know, they're speaking from their religious positions and their religious dogmas and doctrines to people who want nothing to do with either of them.
Yeah, exactly. And it, like you say, it's nothing but a money-making scam. It's, you know, I'll go back. My religious experience, I got into, and I find all religions like that now, but I got into Buddhism a couple decades ago, and at first, it was pretty cool, but basically, it was this, you know, Nichiren Shoshu sect, and any sect that even practiced, chanted the same stuff. Watch out. The closer they were, the more evil they were, because it was like more competition. This is the right club, you know? This
yeah.
is the right club. And there was ways they kind of like let you know in a subtle way. You're so enlightened to be chanting this and being this group, and no, it was in the lay, you know, I wasn't a priest or anything, but, you know, I just notice that whenever I see it, it's just like the Catholics and the Protestants, and, I mean, it's just a money grab. Money and power.
Yeah, it's a hustle.
Yeah. You know, they just can't face the fact that, okay, you've got your 60, 70, 80 years on this planet, if you get to live that long, you know, if they don't screw it up too fast, as it seems like they're doing, you know, everywhere. It's just like from what they're doing in West Virginia to Wisconsin to every little speck of the planet, and it gets disparaging, and you kind of. But then there's the ego part of you that thinks I'm so special, my consciousness has to go on forever, you know, which I find kind of cosmically comic.
Well put. Well put. I don't know. I don't know what, you know. I don't know where the candle flame when the goes when the candle blows out. So I'm certainly not qualified to talk about what consciousness, soul, whatever. I don't know. And that's all. That's all I can say. I don't know.
I know. Well, I mean, I even, you know, I used to you know, take the pieces of paper with the Dancing Man decades ago and magic mushrooms and all that, and that was all pretty cool, but I never, like, got really any doors of perceptions opening so much so that, you know, I saw anything except a good time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no, nobody ever showed you the blueprints or anything or gave you the passwords.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I understand you completely. And I'm okay, you know. I really am. I'm okay with the First Amendment. I cherish the First Amendment, right?
Right.
I don't want anybody. Listen, I think I saw it put best on one of those little graphics that you see on Facebook from time to time. I saw something the other day, and I don't even know if I captured, screen capped it or not. But it said something about you can believe anything you want to. If you want to believe there are unicorns that live in your shoes, that's fine by me. But I have a problem when you start telling me that the unicorns in your shoes are telling you to tell me how to live my life without you, and that I need unicorns in my shoes too.
Right.
Because that really is what most of this is.
Oh yeah, I mean,
they can't, and you know, the very idea, Jim, that this is a veil of tears and that this is a world of suffering. Well, it is a world of suffering. And it's a world of suffering in large part because there are a lot of people out there who say that God wants it to be a world of suffering so that we can better appreciate the life to come. Which is just, well, it's bullshit, right?
Right. Well, it's just like with like some of the best lines about comedy have been like from great comics like George Carlin, that bit he did about, you know, he should have sent you to this horrible place. Why? Because he loves you so much.
Right.
And the thing is, 99.9% of what religion you quote unquote choose isn't choice. It's like where you're born, when you're born. You know, it's, you know, in the time span of humanity's existence. I mean, you're born in the Middle East 1,000 years before Christ. There's no Jesus, there's no Muhammad, but bump it up a couple hundred, 1,000 years here, a couple hundred years, then all of a sudden this place is, Christian, this place is Muslim, and then go up to the 1600s. Then all of a sudden you got the Protestants and the Catholics, you know, fighting for your mortal soul or killing you because you don't believe the right thing if you're not in the right province.
Well, that's a pretty good general encapsulation of it. You know, it's also worth pointing out that in the ancient world, now granted, the Old Testament is rife with, and God said to go unto the Ramalama-ding-dongites and kill them unto the last man and last woman and slay them and slaughter them and chop them into tiny pieces and kill every beast of the field and kill the things that creep and crawl and fly and you know, murder. There's some of that in there, but for the most part, religions, the idea of religious warfare was foreign. I mean, it was incomprehensible in the ancient world. The ISIS acolytes would no sooner call for people to go to war against the adherents of Mithra or Horus or Jove. No. I mean, there was religious iconography in war. There always is. But the idea of religious warfare as religious warfare was almost unheard of. You don't get that until you get Christianity and Islam.
Well, like Mike Malloy said last week or whatever, something to the effect, or maybe it was the week before, but it was something to the effect about there's 8 wars going on right now, and I think just about everyone, religion's playing a pretty big part in it. Surprise, surprise. You know, it's just like another great comic, I can't remember his name, he died. You've cited him before. In fact, you played a bit of him about last week.
Bill Hicks?
Bill Hicks, the great Bill Hicks. Yeah.
We here at the Horn, we say the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him.
Right, the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. he was great, man. But he just summons, hits the nail right on the head. And then, like, yeah, you know, believe it or not, I've got family members that they'll buy into it to a great extent, or they seem to. And, you know, we choose not to discuss it because, they can't deal. You know, I mean, all I bring up is, I always find it the question I bring up, I mean, is the difference between the Protestant Reformation. And I find most Christians, i.e. Catholics, that I know around here, or any religion, don't even know there's a difference between Catholicism and Protestantism.
Well, there's that, and then I had a very sincere question. I was talking, I guess it was last night, about how that one author who was interviewed on Fox and what's her name, Lauren Green. I still love that. I just chuckle every time I say her name or think it. Lauren Green. Get Hop Singh in here. Maybe he can understand the Muslim. But Lauren Green said, well, why, you're a Muslim. Why would you write a book about Jesus? And along the way, I pointed out that, you know, this guy can actually read the original Greek versions of the New Testament that 99.999 repeating decimal out there forever can't read, okay? And Betsy asked me this question via the chat, and she said, why don't Christians read it in the original? And I think she was kind of surprised by my answer.
Yeah.
And the answer is, in the English-speaking world, vast hordes of dirt, dumb, and pig-ignorant Christians think the English is the original. I mean, I there are Baptists out there and various other fundamentalist evangelicals, and I didn't mean to turn this into Wednesday, but that's okay, who think that there is something holy about the King James Version. For instance, if you read from the New Revised Standard Version, well, you're hellbound. Now, and at the same time, these are the same people who are so vociferous about their desire to run our lives.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like religion's basically like as I'm talking to you, there's a subconscious dialogue, the dialogue in my head of what I'm going to say next and all that. And I think a lot of people who pray, they think that voice inside their head is God speaking to them, and it's just them talking to themselves or thinking, you know, they're the echo chamber, you know. It's kind of funny, but it's scary.
Well, and you like me live in a place where you can't swing a kitchen towel around your head without hitting some godforsaken, and I do mean godforsaken, place of worship.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I lived in Vegas for a couple of years, and I mean, even there you run into people. Of course, in Vegas, but, you know, more praying going on in the casino than anywhere else. But I mean, even there, I'd run into people, you know. And I remember telling some other guy, finds out I'm an atheist, and he's like, "Well, what do you think happens when you die?" I go, "Nothing. No, something's got to happen. Okay, your body decomposes." No, what happens to your spirit? He just couldn't wrap his mind around that his little special brand of consciousness has a beginning and an end, just like the solar system, just like our sun, just like everything else.
The universe? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in large part, Jim, that's because it scares people.
Yeah, well, actually, in a way, yeah, I understand that, because it's kind of scary. But another way, it's kind of like, boy, what a relief. You know, you don't have to worry about this God who loves you so much torturing you forever because you happen to be wrong, born in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Bob, I'm going to let you go, buddy.
All right. Well, I'm glad you called in, Jim. It's good to hear from you. You stay cool down that way. I was up in D.C., and all I could think about week before last now, walking around there, 110 heat index, actual temperature of like 98 degrees, humidity out the gazoo. I was walking around thinking, you know, you can tolerate this when it's New Orleans, because, you know, you can just pop into one of the little shops, get one of those Slurpee margarita or whatever, and just keep bebopping on down the street and cool off. But no, I mean, I hadn't felt anything like what I felt 2 weeks ago since the last time I was in New Orleans. All right.
Let me know next time you come down to New Orleans. Maybe we can hook up. Check you later.
All right. You take care, Jim. See ya.
All right.
Bye now. Calling from Louisiana, Stan. That was Jim. And by the way, going right back to the phones, a quick one in from Ron in Raleigh. I mentioned unicorns and shoes, and Ron said, "You remember the planking craze from a minute ago?" And yes, I do, because my son had to have me take pictures of him planking. Well, the new craze is unicorning. Bunches of people being photographed in unicorn masks. We are indeed amusing ourselves to death. Hear, hear. And Philip, with a note from a note regarding the church and women, he says, even worse, Bob, the Pope suggested that women assume increased visibility by emulating the role model of the Madonna. Now, I wouldn't protest if my wife had not reached menopause, because then I could look forward to being a foster father to a new Messiah, but we're out of the ballgame altogether thanks to the passage of time. Then again, maybe he said, be like Madonna. As I said, my Spanish isn't that good, and who knows what the non-paternal father reads and listens to in his leisure time. All in all, I'm as excited about the non-European Pope as I was by the non-German Führer. He was, after all, an Austrian. Oh, Philip has a talent. Yes, just cruising right along and then right, yeah, getcha. Let's go back to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to join in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Juanita. How are you?
Just trying to make it, Bob.
I know.
Listen, I tried to call in yesterday on Moran Monday, but...
Did you have a Moran for us?
Well, no, I just wanted to get on the conversation about... Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity being taken off the air.
Oh, that conversation is still open.
Oh, well, good. Well, you know, about 2 years ago in May of 2011, there was several articles that came out. Salon did one, The Daily Beast, and... I think Daily Cause. They all sort of came out at the same time. And they were basically saying, and the Young Turk,
right.
Uger did a video on the fact that right-wing radio was dying. One of the things that they said was that there was a new rating system. And they had these portable people meters that were measuring the audience of talk radio, and what they have found that nobody was listening, and that Rush Limbaugh, that 20 million viewers that he professed to have, that comes from him.
Yeah. But see, Juanita, I'm glad you brought the topic up again, though, because it deserves to be fleshed out a little bit. Understand that whether it's Nielsen or Arbitron, and Arbitron in particular, all they could ever do was provide a statistical sampling. Now, this is not to say that there is no use and no purpose to statistics, because obviously there are. But they could never point to someone and say, that guy there or that woman over there was listening to Rush or anybody else from, you know, for 2.5 hours, and they live, and here's what they make, and that's what they buy. It's all just statistical inferences.
Right. Right. And I just never believed that the man had 20 million viewers. I don't believe that Fox, I think there's something going on with their rating system, too. I could be wrong about that, but, you know, I certainly don't trust Murdoch.
No, but you've got a very, and see, this is the same kind of thing that I've wondered for a very long time, too. If you take, for instance, you know, he got that 20 million number by saying that he had 4 million people a day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the simple answer to that. But still, you take 20 million people who aren't being charged anything to listen to the program,
right,
who are only having ads for Bose Wave radios and vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off of Swedish mattresses, and per inquiry ads for lumber liquidators and window pane warehouse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's making $50 million. Now,
yeah,
his syndicator, you know, he talks about the Excellence in Broadcasting Network, for instance. There's no such animal, okay? It's just him. And his real syndicator is Clear Channel, because Clear Channel owned Premier, and Premier is, or owns Premier, and Premier is his syndicator. Still with me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they got a lot of employees.
Yes.
And the head guy at Premier or Clear Channel makes a goat-gagging ton of money. So not only do you have to clear $50 million to pay the gas bag, you have to clear all the money to keep the company operating, and while it was still publicly traded, pay an occasional dividend. Now, for the life of me, and maybe it's because I am not good at this sort of thing, and I freely admit that that may be a possibility. It might even be a likelihood. But for the life of me, I cannot begin to even calculate, compute, or contemplate the number of Bose Wave radios and vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses you would have to sell to crank out that kind of cash. There's got to be some fraud in the system somewhere.
Well, I also stumbled on an article, and I didn't save it on my hard drive, but it was off of Democratic Underground, and they said that you really need to check with your state budget to see if they are not subsidizing right-wing radio with advertising dollars, because this article had exposed the state of Mississippi as subsidizing right-wing radio. So I don't know if these government these government commercials, or what do you call them, what is the proper word for it? I can't think of it.
PSAs?
Well,
PSAs are supposed to run for free.
Oh, okay. But
see, there was, at least at one point, I understand, there were subsidies coming through from, like, the Heritage Foundation, maybe. Okay? Uh-huh. And see, there's so much duplicity, there's so much outright dishonesty in the way the right wing runs that talk model, because they say, well, you know, progressive left radio never does any good in any markets because, well, no one wants to hear them, and they can't compete in the free market. Well, right wing talk radio has never been about the free market. It ain't free market if you're getting a check from the Heritage Foundation or the Competitive Enterprise Institute or the American Enterprise Institute or the Enterprise Institute. Okay, that's not free market. That's socialism, really, of a sort. Not that I'm a critic of socialism, but the point being that nobody believes that line of bull except the people who should otherwise be subsidizing progressive radio. Oh, no, you need to do that by selling. Yeah. No, you got to sell bread. Why don't you get some of those ads about the vacuum cleaner that picks up the bowling balls that drops them on the bed? Why don't you run those? It worked for Rush. And so we wind up, and I use myself as the example, Juanita, because it's the example I know, but I know some others. And so you wind up struggling just to stay afloat. I mean, I cannot begin to talk about, because if I did, I would just turn the lights off and walk out of the room and say, done. I can't begin to talk about the things that don't get done around here, you know, because of the way fundraising runs.
Oh, yes, and I just think the whole right-wing apparatus is basically a scam. And it's a scam that is being financed by a very few rich people and making it appear as though it is grand. I mean, just like, for example, I remember it was a couple of years ago, I was in Beckley, and my aunt gets up and turns on right-wing radio every morning, and she can't hear, so it's two notches below World War II. It's excruciating. Okay? It's excruciating.
Oh, my God. You got me.
But she has sense enough to know that it's BS, you know. But
she listens anyway, because it's like listening to a train wreck, I guess.
She says she just can't stand the quietness of the house. And but they were, I was down there, it was on a Memorial Day weekend, and it was oh gosh, what is his name, crazy bald head guy, and the last name is German, can't think of it.
Oh, are you talking about not that G. Gordon Liddy?
No, I think Herman Cain may have taken his place, or is, or subs for him. Oh, I can't think of
him. Oh, Bortz?
Yeah. And
see, I never thought of that name sounding German. I always thought of his name sounding like somebody who had just gone, you know, one beer over the line, sweet Jesus, and was getting it out in Bortz! Yeah.
Well, anyway, he was talking about these black mob gangs that had been running the streets of across the country on Memorial Day, and they were attacking white people.
And was it the New Black Panthers?
No.
Oh, I'll be darned. And usually it's the New Black Panthers these days.
When I got back to Columbus, they were talking about it. And so I went on the internet, and this whole black mob story started with, it appears, Matt Drudge, and you could see it pop up on every right-wing site. So what they do, and the story was not true, what they do is they make up their own stories, and then they run through this echo chamber, which is really a small group of people, and it makes it appear like it's a big story. The mainstream media picks it up, doesn't check it, and the next thing you know, people's lives have been messed up, just like with Shirley Sherrod, Acorn, the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, you can see this, see it posted, these fake stories, on all these right-wing sites, and then it's further instigated by right-wing radio. So to me, the whole apparatus is just a big, big scam. And only the most stupid people, I mean, I can't say stupid, well, maybe naive, fall for it. So, you know, I am hoping that the bottom has fallen out and that they cannot hold up the, you know, that they're running out of money.
There's this line out of one of my favorite films, Chinatown. And at one point, Jack Nicholson asks, what do you got that you don't already have? What do you want that you can't already get?
Yeah,
talking about wealth, and that, I mean, that's a question. You know,
yeah.
If I hate to even make this analogy, but if I was that guy, you know, the guy with the Viagra OxyContin problem, if I was that guy, and at this point in time, he's probably got, you know, something approaching $1 billion.
Oh yes.
I think I can. How do you not? And this goes to the nature of my own curiosity. How do you not just say, well, I hope I'm in reasonably good health because I'm going to spend the rest of this time, I'm going to Machu Picchu. After that, I'm going to Chichen Itza. After that, I'm going to Antarctica. I'm going to see as much of this little bitty, this relatively rinky-dink planet as I possibly can see, and I'll still die rich. I mean, why would you? Hell, you got that kind of money. You know, he never finished college.
Yeah.
Buy your way into Harvard. Get a degree. Play golf. Learn to cook. Do something.
Exactly.
But apparently, I mean, he's got his own Gulfstream jet, and that takes a lot of money to keep up, and, you know, he's certainly not going to fly with the hoi polloi like us.
Yes.
He's got a walled-in beach compound and apparently a basement with a pit where he keeps his wife. This is apparently a character flaw of mine, Juanita, because I can't understand what motivates him anymore, or the life support system for a haircut, or any of these guys or women who have been handsomely compensated for simply lying to people for 10 or 15 or 20 years. It's lost on me. Because I know what my fantasies are, and I'm not talking about anything weird. You know, while I was in California for the first time in my life this past January, our buddy Tom, who listens to the program, most generously offered to actually make one of, you know, I got to tick off one of the things on my bucket list. I got on a sailboat and sailed around San Francisco Bay. And it was mine, but so no, you know, I got that kind of money. I know where to pick up the phone and call and say, build the boat now. Kit that thing out, learn to handle it, learn to sail it, and you know, I'll be back in 3 years. I'll call you from Tierra del Fuego.
What is something about, even, you know, when you have the greatest of wealth?
Well, it begins to own you, and you don't own it. Is that a fair statement?
It's not enough to even have the wealth. I guess you want the power that goes along with the wealth, and that means manipulating people. That means, I mean, it would be nice if wealthy people would spend their wealth, pay their taxes, and leave us the hell alone. But it's not enough. They feel that their money gives them a certain amount of power, and they want to use it. I mean, you look at television, and you look at the a lot of these programs that are on where people put their mansions on so people can look at them and drool over having these 50 room mansions with 50 bathrooms, and it's not even enough for them to they want you to see it, they want you to admire them, they want you to worship them.
Yeah, and in that gas bags particular case, he relishes being the head of the Republican Party. Because, you know, they may say that Rents Priebus, I can't say that.
I know.
Rents Priebus of the Royal Imodium Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat. Come along, Splat! They may say that he's the head of the Republican National Committee, but the gas bag is the guy who runs that outfit.
Yes, he does.
And if power and influence is your particular aphrodisiac, then no, he can never walk away. He's owned by it. He is absolutely owned by it, which means that he's going to die fat, miserable, and you know, some little voice will whisper in his ear at the very end, it was all a waste.
Oh yeah, and he, Bob. The thing about Rush Limbaugh is I mean, it's so obvious that he's a phony, and he's not smart. And I can't believe, well, there are people who listen to him who just don't know any better, I guess. The thing I will say about his style of delivering his message probably has more to do with the content of what he's saying. I mean, he's very, has a lot of rhythm, I'll put it that way. He knows, he delivers the message, in a different way. I mean, he's not like, certainly not like NPR. So his delivery, is different for a broadcaster. And
well, you know, I had that sound clip of him what, last week, 2 weeks ago when I was in D.C., where he was grunting like a pig into the microphone?
Oh, yeah, he's gone. I mean, his time in the sun is over. I think the drugs and
stuff just
got him in completely. But
I worry for a minute, Juanita, that I'm being a little bit of a hypocrite because I talk about how, you know, his wealth owns him, and I don't I don't ever want to be a hypocrite. But I mean, I understand some element of that because I mean, just to tell you a little bit of reality from around here, there's stuff that has to be done here at the mansion, okay? And I'm the guy who has to do the stuff. And I actually need to take about 2 weeks because I know it, well, I hope it sounds like I prepare for this program because I do.
Oh, yeah.
And that takes a lot of time during the day. It's like a job. I love this job more than any other job I've ever had, but it's work.
Yep.
I need to take about 2 weeks of not having to prep for a show every day and do stuff here.
Right.
But if I do that...
Oh, I know.
But if I do that, then I'll never get back on the air again because the internet will get turned off and the phones will get turned off and everything that makes all this go gets turned off. So, I mean, it's the definition of a rock and a hard place. Devil in the deep blue sea.
Listen, I will admit, you know, when you're not on the air, once you get used to hearing you, you know, once you become, you know, once the person becomes a faithful listener, I mean, they become spoiled. I mean, you want to hear, I mean, where is Bob? You know? And so... Yeah, you know, but if you need to take time off, then, you know, your audience should understand that you're doing all this by yourself, just you and Agnes. And, it's not like Rush Limbaugh. You don't have the money. You don't have
But I can't.
I know. Well,
you know,
I hope that the audience would be more understanding. That you do deserve some time off, and that because you're not just a radio host, you're an activist, you're a thespian, you're a comedian. I heard you, Bob, mention, and I laughed because I thought I was the only one that. Well, among my friends, I'll put it that way, that watch the Squidbillies, and you mentioned Granny Kyler Squidbilly.
Oh,
and I laughed because when I heard you do the first time I heard you do your prayer meeting Wednesday, it reminded me of the Squidbillies. I mean, I love the Squidbillies. It's disturbing.
But
I know folks. I mean, not to.
I remember when I first mentioned the Squidbillies, and people said, "I can't believe you would watch something like that mocks your beloved Appalachian culture."
Well, it's not. Look, I mean,
it doesn't mock anything. It's a reality show.
Look, my grandmother was a wonderful person. She's been dead since 1989, but. The way Granny, and I call my grandmother Granny.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the way they have this Granny's lipstick on, it's just the way my grandmother would wear.
There's a lady in town who looks like Granny Kyler. And she's as sweet as can be. And I would, but yeah. And it's the lipstick. It's the lipstick.
And the scarf on the head, and I just can't help. Maybe it's because I'm from West Virginia as well. But I love that show, and I know sometimes it gets a little rough, but I can't help it. It's hilarious, and whoever does the voice, well, Granny, the guy who does Granny's voice is a guy.
Yeah, well, the guy who does Granny's voice is the same guy who does Master Shake's voice on Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, that's another one of my shows.
Yeah, me too.
I can't help it, Bob. You know, but...
Who would have ever suspected, Juanita? You're a real subversive.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. There's darkness in my soul, Bob. I mean, it is. But if I could just say just two quick things, and then I promise I'll hang up because I know there's other people want to get on. You mentioned about the high heels. I think it was Friday. With the pistols.
Yeah, oh yeah.
High heels. Those, now, from what I understand, the first time I saw a pair was on a website for clothes. They were called, it's a style of clothes called steampunk. And
okay, I get steampunk, sure.
It came off with sort of that, Wild Wild West show. You know, remember that show? And then, what's his name? Oh, gosh, you mentioned him, the actor, African-American, did the movie.
Oh, Will Smith?
Yeah, yeah. And it's sort of...
Has he ever been allowed to kiss a white woman?
Well, you know, I would like for him to even do a dark-skinned black woman. those guys, you know, it's very, very, very... I don't know if you've noticed this, but they very seldom cast, if at all, a dark-skinned black woman as a lead, I mean, as a romantic interest. It kind of goes, and this even goes back to Oscar Michel, who was like one of the first African-American filmmakers. You know, he would cast really, really light-skinned women as the beautiful and the love interest, and usually the dark-skinned women were either villains or mammies if they were fat. And that pretty much hasn't changed. It sort of, in the 70s, for a brief moment, black was beautiful.
Do you, I'm not giving anything away, but I'm guessing you are of a certain age. Do you remember the absolute worldwide conniption, nationwide conniption that was held, that was had over the TV show Julia?
Yes.
You know, a positive depiction of a woman of color. You know, she was a nurse, wasn't she?
She was a nurse. I remember that very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone mentioned Cosby yesterday being like Clarence Thomas. No. Cosby is...
No. Cosby is...
He's just... He's old. Old. I mean, I think his he reminds me of an old grandpa type. But he has donated millions upon millions of dollars to historic black colleges.
I know that. The reference, though, was more in the... he has this predilection for lecturing on cultural topics with which he may not be entirely...
Well, he did go... I remember I was in the mall.
And this was, and that was in reference to the Don Lemon business.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's just something... I'm 50, okay? But I try really hard not to get too far in touch with my inner codger, okay? and so when I hear some privileged person... And, you know, it is possible to be black and privileged in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Don Lemon, for instance, is privileged.
Yes.
He's got male privilege. He doesn't have white privilege, but he's got male privilege. And when I hear some person of privilege banging away at how a 15-year-old boy wears his pants...
Yeah.
I get little bells and whistles and sirens go off, Juanita. I mean... Because I mean, I immediately, you know, start hearing this little voice in the back of my head. Hey, back in my day, by God, we wore our galluses and our pants stayed up. And it rubs me the wrong way. It's not my style. If I tried to wear my pants with the waist of my pants around the middle of my thighs, one thing would happen. I would fall over flat on my face and bloody my nose because I'm a klutz, okay? But I'm not going to pass some sort of overarching social judgment on an entire group of people, white, black, or whatever, because of their pants. Now, to be fair, if Ferg was doing that, we would have a family conversation.
Yeah.
Right, Agnes? Yeah, Agnes is. Oh, yeah. And but it wouldn't be some blanket condemnation. It would be, okay, give us a good reason. Why are you doing this? And
well, Lem, I was shocked because he's a young man, and he had Larry Elder, who was just an awful, disgusting human being, on the same show, and. You know, Cosby is older, and he grew up during segregation. And, you know, look, I remember being in the mall in the 70s, and Cosby had, there was a film, some kind of thing going on at the mall. It may have been Black History Month, I don't know. But he was doing a film about stereotypes in media back then. So he's contributed. I mean,
I get that. No, this was only.
Lemon is sort of young to be that narrow-minded, and considering that he is gay as well, you would think that he would certainly.
Wait, stop. What? He's gay too?
Yeah, Don Lemon is gay.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, I mean, it's neither one way or the other, but. That sort of ups the ante on whom he ought not be lecturing.
And that's what I thought when I mean, the last thing you want to do is to be stereotyped, and certainly if you're gay, and he knows that, and to say that about kids wearing their pants. And look, Trayvon Martin, that photo of him, he was wearing khakis. You know, they were like light beige. He was not dressed hip-hop, what I would call hip-hop. It was more, the jacket didn't even come, wasn't a long jacket that hung down below his hips and then the pants sagging. He had on khakis. And he looked more, it was more of a sporty or preppy or, to me. I don't know too many hip hop kids that wear light beige khakis. I don't know.
No.
What do I know? You know, I know my brother wears khakis and they're light colored.
That's kind of preppy.
Well,
it's a well pressed pair of khakis with a nice crease in the. I mean, that's Southern. But no, I get your, you know, I get your point completely. It's and probably maybe the reference to the Cosby was ill placed on my part. I was just thinking.
No, it's just that there's a big difference between like I said, I think.
But, you know, Don Lemon is always well put together on screen, and mm-hmm. looks like he. Looks like he dresses at Brooks Brothers. And see, that's the thing. Yes. If you dress out of Brooks Brothers. Or something similar.
Yes.
You don't get to tell the 15-year-old kid who has a greater likelihood of winding up in the prison industrial complex than he does in any university in these United States how he should or should not be dressing.
Well, I'm convinced, Bob, that they pick people like Don Lemon for those, you know. I mean, when you look at African-Americans in the media, they only going to go but so far. Now maybe MSNBC, Joy Reid is pretty good.
Yeah, I never saw CNN reaching out to Tavis Smiley.
No, I Tavis is not my guy either, because Tavis, I'm going to get in trouble with the, when I say this, but look, Cornell and Tavis, they were millionaires long before the name Barack Obama was ever uttered. And that little thing that Tavis had used to have on C-SPAN, it was great speeches and everything. But that was sponsored by some of the most corrupt corporations, Wells Fargo being one, Exxon Mobil.
Well, yeah, and just to take this outside the realm of any kind of a discussion of race, Juanita, let's take that for a minute, and let's understand that that is what you're subjected to. I mean, if you're happy being anything other, if you want to be more than a guy with a microphone and aging equipment and a leaky roof and busted plumbing and shoddy wiring, if you want to be anything more than that, you got to go out and you got to make deals with Northrop Grumman or Wells Fargo or Citi or Bank of America, because they got the money.
Well, this is true, but I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'm not mad at Tavis or Dr. West for making money. But I think it's hypocritical of them to turn around and say they are in the thing for the poor, and maybe they are. But look, Dr. West makes $30,000 to $50,000 for speaking engagements. I mean, he accused Obama of being not authentically black. But look, Cornel West has had four wives, and only one of them, the last one, was of African descent. I mean, he's not, so he can't. I mean, don't go.
But see, this goes back to privilege issues, okay?
Right.
You know, there's something that happens to people.
Yeah.
That's a big generalization on my part, isn't it?
Well, you're right.
But there's something, and you know what? I can say it because it happened to me at one point in time. I mean, there was a time, and I certainly wasn't doing radio, but you know, there was a time I drove a flashy car, I wore flashy suits,
nothing wrong with it,
and was absolutely divorced from, and I don't mean that in the marital sense, but was, you know, I was pretty much divorced from reality. I was all about my world. And many might say I was an ass. Many still probably do. But I'm a different ass now. And it's not something that's been foisted upon me by some over, you know, fickle finger of fate. These are choices I made. And one of the choices I made was to walk away from that stuff.
Well, then, you know, you evolved. You evolved intellectually. You know, you evolved spiritually, and you grew as a human being. Some of us don't do that, Bob. I wished I knew what you know at 50 when I was 50. I mean, if my entire life would be different if someone would have just pulled me aside and say, "Hey, listen to this," or something.
And
like that.
But you know what? There's a lot of that that, I spend a shocking amount of time thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not offering myself up as some paragon of knowledge. I'm not. I'm reminded every day how much I don't know. But I think back. You know, was it because I went to college? And my answer is always, well, no. And everything that I want to point to was that. And the answer is always comes back, no. So I don't know. I don't know.
Well, you
and I don't know. I think moreover, I don't understand the mechanics of knowing or learning. For me, it was just something that I was raised to. I joke about being a recovering Southern Baptist. I was dipped by the heel in fundamentalist religion, but But beyond that, I was also I think you could make it would be a fair statement to say that while there was a religious upbringing, the other part of my upbringing that was far more influential, I think, was that I was raised to treat learning with the same fervor that religious zealots bring to faith.
Yes.
And to constantly be learning and constantly be processing and trying to trying to come to conclusions, reach answers. And that's the only thing I can point to.
Well, yes, and you also have a PhD from UCS. You know what that is?
No.
University of Common Sense.
Oh, no. There are plenty of people who would tell you I ain't got a lick of that.
But, yeah, look, like I said, Bob, if only, I remember hearing Naomi Wolf. You know who Naomi Wolf
is? Yeah.
She wrote, but before she wrote her political book, she wrote a book called The Beauty Myth. And it was about these images, how women are made to feel bad about the way they look. And how the beauty industry gets you to spend all this money. And she was only 29 years old. And at that time, I was 40. And I felt so ashamed. Because here I was, 40 years old. And there was this 29-year-old schooling me. And where was I at 29? Well, I was working. I was working and I was trying to make it. And it just depends on how you were reared, and you know, you were very lucky that your parents instilled in you, you know, the value of learning. Now, my parents my folks were pretty good with that too, but you know, things were difficult in my household because as I've mentioned on your show before, my mother's, both her husbands left, and they, you know, we were children who were left, and it was very, very hard. But you know, I think if I had children, I would tell them that most of what you hear specifically in about American culture is not good for you. Take this book and read it and learn as much as you can about your history, and as much as you can about everybody, all groups of people, and then, you know, but don't become a victim of America's, you know, their fake ideas of what family is, their fake ideas of what success is. And, I mean, it's just like, you may not have the money, the wealth that Rush Limbaugh has, but, I mean, Bob, you've helped a lot of people. More than Rush Limbaugh hasn't helped anybody, you know. What has he done to make it easier to enhance somebody's life or to make somebody feel good about themselves?
I think once a year he donates like one day's pay or something to the Leukemia Society.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But I
well, and by the way, I have to tell you, you're getting a little pushback here. Ron in Raleigh wrote and said, he said, is the intimation that one cannot advocate for the poor if one is wealthy? And can I also intimate that one cannot marry outside one's race if one is employed in a place where most of one's peers are white and the women you meet are likely white? Ron says Brothers West and Smiley came by whatever wealth they have, honestly. And I think that's true.
I think that's true. But I think if it's kind of
the nature of my query is what impact does privilege have on understanding the situation on the ground? And all I can do, I can't point to race because I can't. I have no authenticity in it. But I can say that within the spheres that I do have some experience with, I can say this much, Juanita. I'll work by example here. A man named Larry Gibson was a dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He inspired countless, probably thousands of individuals to give a damn about mountaintop removal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
3 days after he had surgery to put stents in his arteries to keep him from dying, he died. And he died swinging a weed eater up on his mountain that he had struggled to keep preserved as a sort of a means for other people to come and see what mountaintop removal does. It was like John Henry. He died with the hammer in his hand, you know, that whole
mm-hmm.
legend.
Oh, yes.
Larry, bless his heart, died with a weed eater in his hand. And he had been fundraised off of. He had been trotted around. And Big Greens had made a hero of him. And he died on a mountain with a weed eater in his hand. Okay? So let's just put it this way. If you run the Sierra Club, you're not going to die on a mountain with a weed eater in your hand. Okay?
Yes, that's true.
Because privilege attaches. All right? And I'm probably saying something that's going to get me in trouble. I've been told on more times than I care to it's been said directly to me, you can't criticize the club.
Yeah.
Okay? But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's a report out from, and I've talked about this before, there's a report out from 2 years ago that says that the so-called environmental movement has become moribund simply because the big greens aren't getting the money down to the people who need it to do the work they're doing. And it's a fact. I mean, we've seen it in operation. Remember, the AIC campaign has almost no support whatsoever from the big greens. There's a magnificent organization in D.C. called Earth Justice, and I love them, and they offer us whatever support they can. But it can't be financial. They offer us, you know, they're a legal outfit, and so they've taught us how to work the halls of Congress. They've stepped in and coordinated briefings with us. They've done magnificent work, and I respect and admire every member of that organization. One of whom is no longer even with us, and it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But you know, no, we've been left high and dry by the folks who are, you know, pulling down maybe a quarter, you know, maybe the head folks are pulling down a quarter of a million or an eighth of $1 million a year. And you know, it leaves you in this position, Juanita, where you don't know what to think. I mean, you really, really don't. So I'm not saying that wealth makes it something impossible, but I'm certainly saying that it has transformative properties that must be guarded against profoundly.
Oh, I agree. And to the emailer that said about Wes, the problem I have too is that he has chose to, you know, dwell in the ivory tower of the Ivy League universities. He's never lent his talent to any of the historically black universities. There's a debate going on in the African American community about, you know, Tavis and Mr. West and Dr. West and.
I love listening the show that they have on NPR. I love to listen to. I catch it. It usually comes on like Sunday evenings around here, and I do. I love to listen to it. It's really, really listenable radio. I like that radio better than I like Tavis' standalone show.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's dialogue-based, and you're getting the interchange of ideas, kind of like what goes on here. I'm uncomfortable making those blanket generalizations, but, you know, by the same token, Obama going to Chattanooga today, Juanita.
Yeah.
Offering up an Amazon distribution center as some sort of a future for the American economy. I was kicking furniture over that. I mean, if you let's assume for a minute that you get a full-time job at that Amazon distribution center, which is another word for warehouse.
Right.
A full-time job that pays $13 an hour.
Right.
That was touted by President Obama as something for rebuilding the middle class. Well, that $13 an hour job at Amazon, at Amazon's warehouse, is not by even the broadest of definitions going to get you into the middle class.
Well,
it might be what, $26,000-$27,000 a year? You're still.
I agree.
You know, if you've got a family of four, you're in poverty at that.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you know.
Absolutely, and.
On the other hand, maybe you and your spouse both get full time jobs at the Amazon warehouse. Well, then maybe. Maybe you'll be middle class, but you'll be middle class and never have time to appreciate it.
Well, you know, I have to say, Bob, that I know I'm going to get in trouble for this. Again, this is I have to blame progressives for some of this, because again, this goes back this. You know, killing good jobs. It started, you know, I would say Reagan. It really started chopping at the unions when he fired the.
Chopping had been going on long before. Consider the passage of Taft-Hartley.
But one of the things I noticed that even when I was working in the 80s during the Reagan administration, was as soon as they start chopping, and I worked for a bank, and of course, if you said the word union, they would fire you. And but one of the things I remember, that as soon as that went through, but those air traffic controllers, the bank started cutting benefits left and right. I mean, it's like they got this word, well, since there's not going to be any unions, we don't have to, we can cut their sick days, we can cut this, we can cut that. My brother just retired from a bank after 44 years. He started when he was 16, before he graduated from high school, and he stayed after he graduated, and he never left. Because we were told, you get a job, you keep it. And benefits, just he said if he didn't retire, he wouldn't have anything. There would be nothing left. They cut everything. And he says, now you start off working, there's no benefits at all, none, zero. So, you know.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know if you're listening to Dr. Bill yet or not, but I really, really encourage you to do so, Juanita, because he's talking about these very things. You know, he's talking about, for instance, the European model that our buddy Scott from Sweden brought up in a note to Dr. Bill about co-determination, where workers and management see themselves as on the same team and actually have a legally mandated requirement that workers have a say so in the board and in shareholder votes and so forth and so on.
Right.
But isn't it interesting that a company, for instance, like Volkswagen, which operates under a model like that in Germany, can build a plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that has no such requirement. The same thing goes for Mercedes, that operates under that model in Germany, builds a plant in Alabama, no such requirement. BMW operates under that model in Germany, builds a plant in South Carolina, has no such requirement. You know, the Japanese model was similar. Our buddy Robert in Kyushu has talked about this from time to time.
Yes.
And you know, the CEO salaries were not 2,000 times the average worker's salary. And you had labor and management sitting down to make the process better. Well, is, you know, how much of that is in place at the giant Hyundai factory in Alabama, Stan?
Oh, yes.
Precious little, I would imagine.
Yes.
And frankly, and I'll get some people mad at me over this. You know what? If I buy, again, we're talking about things I am not going to be doing. If I were to buy a German or a Japanese car, I damn sure want to make sure it was built in Germany or Japan.
Yes.
And I feel really icky saying this, Juanita, but I think there's an element of truth to it. I don't want a car with a Japanese or a German mark on it being made by some guy who's getting paid $9 an hour and worrying about whether or not he's going to make the rent or whether she's going to be able to pay the car payment.
Yes.
Okay? Because that leads to things not being built well. Okay? So
it does.
You know,
I mean, even the cable company, for example.
And I was weaned. I was on Buy American.
Oh yeah.
But how do you square that with how American companies treat their workers? I mean, I've got a statistic here and it's kind of shocking. You know, there's a strike ongoing against fast food outlets in New York City.
New York. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
If McDonald's doubled the amount that they pay their workers, do you know what the impact would be on eating at McDonald's? It would raise the cost of a Big Mac, the bare mention of which I find just repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm such a snob. A Big Mac would cost 68 cents more if McDonald's doubled its worker pay. Now, can we not have a conversation in this country about the fact that changing someone's life that profoundly is worth 68 cents on a Big Mac?
Absolutely. And I think, again, if you pay your workers well, you know, you can kind of rely on the product as being safe. Let's put it that way. I want people who handle my food to have enough money so that they can at least wash their clothes.
Right, and I don't want my vermicelli to have that extra dose of foot funk.
That's right. Because I've seen people at McDonald's with really dirty fingernails and things like that. And
I'll never forget sitting in the little place in D.C. And it wasn't a chain or anything. But just, we were hungry at the end of the day and just went up for some wings, Ferg and I did. And he said, did you see that? And I said, I did not see that giant rat that was as big as a possum go skittering across the floor. No, I did not see that, son. He said, I didn't either.
Oh.
But I'm not so hungry anymore, Dad. And I said, well, my appetite just kind of dried up, too. It was a big, it may have been a possum. I mean, it was a rat. It had that nasty rat tail and that nasty rat teeth. And, it, you know, it stopped for a minute and gave us both the once over and looked at us like, you know, who are you looking at? You know, you want some of me? It had ratitude. And
well, Bob, I have taken up, I apologize to your audience because I, have taken up a lot of time, and I did not mean to do that, but I wanted to get on the thing about the high heels, because, look, I'm one of those people that was stupid enough to wear them when I was working, and they ruin your feet, and they ruin your back. So, you know, if you're going to wear them, make sure you just wear them out somewhere. Or
oh, and it blows my mind, because when I'm in D.C., I see, you know, scores of women just going up and down the sidewalks. And the sidewalks up there on Capitol Hill, at least some of them, are that sort of composite material. It's pebbles and cement that's kind of smooth. And I'm like, why do I not see like 18 broken ankles a day out here? Because we're not talking about little bitty kitten heels or anything. We're talking about the skyscrapers.
They're really stripper heels. That's what they are. They're the kind of shoes that, that's kind of, I don't know. I think women's clothes have gotten very, very close to what, you know, what we would call scandalous women back at, you know, 5-7-inch heels are shoes that strippers wear. And then in the 50s, it's what, what is that woman,
Betty Page?
Page. Yeah, what she, you know, and of course she looks tame compared to, you know, what's going on now. But they are very bad for your feet, I can tell you that. And very bad for the back. And they may look great, you know, to some people, but they sure can mess your feet up. But anyway, Bob, I'm going to let you go, and thank you so much for what.
Well, thank you, Juanita, and
the beautiful Agnes. And so I'll be listening, and I'm going to start listening to the doctor that comes on before.
Yeah, Dr. Bill.
And I always, it's like if I'm out, I usually try to get home so I can.
Well, he welcomes input and dialogue. On the topics that he raises, and he is genuinely unlike anybody I've ever had the privilege of working with in radio. He is incredibly special, and this idea that he has had for the creation of a virtual center for the study of the Constitution, it's still in its infancy, but it has potential to do magnificent things.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
All right, you too.
All right.
I said hi.
Thank you. Will do.
Hey, bye-bye.
Bye now. Juanita calling from Ohio. About 5 minutes before the close of the program here. And so, no, not a lot of time. Can't dive into another story at this point. I want to thank Danny for jumping in with a kind contribution. It means a ton. It truly, truly does. Danny says, you've so impressed me with your humor, I felt commanded by God, no less, to make a small donation. Where's this humor coming from? I always thought of myself as a straight man, you know, the setup guy. He said, I just discovered you, which is a good thing, but I also like Norman Goldman. And he airs the same time you do, a conundrum if ever there was one. Thank Zeus we live in the 21st century and can record things. That two notches shy of World War II remark from Juanita is a laugh riot. I think we're all going to steal that one. And Danny has a past in radio, a community radio station down in Baton Rouge. Once it gets in your blood, It is absolutely incurable, you know, the radio bug. It's part of why I came back to it. Juanita mentioned Betty Page. Ron says, more useless trivia, when Betty Page dropped out of the world of fetish art, she went to work for the Billy Graham Crusades. Oh, my God. You know, that happens, doesn't it? I knew somebody would do that. I always thought of myself as a straight man. Sandra's out there. Are you not a straight man, Bob? Yes. Yeah, I'm a comedy thing. Oh. You know, I'm Abbott, not Costello. Let's put it that way. I'm the unfunny Marx brother. But yeah, I knew it just as soon as I said it that somebody. You guys are quick. You're quick. So prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. I'll be here. I hope you will too. Got a couple of dandies already in the stacks that I've saved by for tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. My colleague Bo Webb is still up there working away. If you haven't called your senators and your member of Congress to tell them that you want the ACT Act passed, it would be a magnificent time. And, dude, just let us know so we can make sure to follow up on your hard work with some hard work of our own. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith, only on the Horn.